So I'm pleased now to be joined on the line by author A.A. Abbott, also known as Helen. 2 years ago, we had a conversation about a book at that point, and excitedly, she has done it again and has a new book out again. And Helen, welcome back.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me back. It's good to be with you.
It's great to catch up with you again. And the new book, excitingly, is, I guess, a kind of crime novel in some ways, and we'll explore some of the themes in it shortly. But to folks who haven't heard our conversation previously and perhaps don't know your work, how would you describe your writing? We're in thriller territory, I guess.
Yes, I'm definitely a thriller writer. I've written 8 books in total, and the first 7 were really in the crime and mystery thriller space. My latest book, book number 8, is a psychological thriller, straight down the line, a psychological thriller called Bright Lies.
And there's always, I think, a Birmingham connection, or you've used certainly Birmingham as the scene for a lot of your crimes.
Yes, I tend to big up Birmingham in my books because I really, really love Birmingham. So it's certainly been the case in the earlier books that the criminals tended to come from London and all the good guys were in Birmingham. This book's slightly different, but I'm still bigging up Birmingham in it. It doesn't feature London anymore. London is yesterday's news.
Well, you heard it here first.
This book starts in Bristol and Somerset, and then the action moves to Birmingham.
Okay, so let's talk about the new book, which is called Bright Lies, and it's kind of billed as a psychological thriller, and chilling is the word, I think, that's been used to describe it. And my understanding is it explores, I would suggest, some quite hidden and deeper crimes and darkness, perhaps.
Yes, it probably touches on domestic noir because it's all about what can happen behind closed doors in the family. It begins when Emily, a 12-year-old girl from Somerset, goes to an art exhibition and she's engaged in conversation with the artist who has produced all the beautiful paintings on the walls. He's a 30-year-old man called David. She warms to him straight away because he looks like her favourite pop star. And she develops a bit of a crush on David, and he exploits that. The start of the book is all about how David and Emily get closer together in not such a good way.
And you've mentioned this already. There is a kind of, I would say, a sort of domestic violence, uncomfortable relationship aspect to this story in particular, and it links, I think, importantly, to the White Ribbon Day and the UN International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
Yes, I think White Ribbon Day is a really, really brilliant initiative in 2 different ways. First of all, it's all about men standing up and being counted and saying, actually, we will not stand for violence against women. David, the abuser in Bright Lies, is somebody who is violent towards women, but there's another really important male character in the book, Jack. And Jack is somebody who is totally protective towards women and would always step in to help them. The second really good White Ribbon Day is the fact that it highlights the fact that there is domestic violence towards women and there is abuse of women and girls, and it does go on and there are things that you can do. In Bright Lies, Emily's mother, Rachel, marries David, and that's really what gives David access to Emily and gives him the opportunity to begin his evil activities. But Rachel does do her best to find out whether David is a bad guy or not, and she goes to the police. And under Claire's law, you can ask the police if your partner's been involved in domestic violence, and they have to tell you. Initiatives like White Ribbon Day highlight to women that they have choices. You can go to the police and ask for help if you have concerns.
Well, there's some very real themes and some quite complex questions, I think, at the heart of this book. So how did you come to that as the impetus for your new book? Because as we said at the start, you've written a number of crime thrillers and psychological thrillers, and there is a link there, I suppose. But what made you shift to this theme and this focus?
Why delve into the darkness, you mean? It's interesting, and it's because it's something that I've wanted to do and wanted to write for a long time, and I guess up until now, I was just sharpening my pencil to the point where I really could write a book with a serious message.
The pandemic and lockdown, I think, has had an effect on certainly a number of the creative folks that we talked to on this show. And I guess writing, there are more distractions as lockdown goes on, but potentially you get more focus. But I think the added aspect to the topic of this book is that obviously domestic violence has increased, hasn't it, throughout this period of lockdown and you know, throughout the pandemic.
Yes, that's been an unfortunate side effect of the pandemic. It's important for victims and survivors of domestic violence to realise that there are people out there who can help them. It is possible to go to the police. It doesn't matter whether your house is locked down or not, you're still able to access those services. You're still able to get counselling if you need it. It is still possible to find a way out and to find hope. The police, the charities, the counsellors, they're still all there.
And as a writer, have you found, I mean, it's a difficult subject, I think, to take on, and very brave, I think, to integrate it in this way into the narrative. But have you found, it's not an easy thing to write about, but have you found perhaps that this period has helped you focus more? Or has it, I guess, when you're writing a novel, you've always got the same challenges, haven't you?
Absolutely. Well, I've had quiet time to sit down and write. So that's the good side of the pandemic. The not so great side of the pandemic is that your social life and your research goes online. So normally I would go out and have coffee with people and do my research by going and visiting people in places. Obviously wasn't able to do that during lockdown. I've had a lot of help from lots of people with the book. I can't stress how much help I've had. Ex-police women and ex-policemen, some club DJs, survivors of abuse, clubbers, readers, writers, all kinds of people have read my book and helped me improve it. It really is a good book because of the teamwork and the help I've had from other people in shaping it and making it realistic, just coming up with a message of hope. Because I have to say, the beta readers, who are like the beta testers, as one of my fellow writers says, pretty much insisted that the book needed to have a good message, as well as go through some of the quite grim stuff that Emily encounters during her journey through Bright Lights. I did take account of all the feedback on facts and on the shape of the book in producing something that ultimately had a message of hope.
And I remember from our last conversation a couple of years ago, you are fairly meticulous, I think, in terms of how you check things are accurate and plausible, but also how, I guess, how they make the reader feel or how the reader responds. And that's quite an intricate process, isn't it? I think
I think there's two aspects to that if we were to unpack it, James. Obviously I do my book research as thoroughly as I can, and I am so grateful to the people who've helped me with it. As I said before, I've had ex-policemen look at it, I've had teachers, I've had all kinds of people help me with the fact. And the other side to it is becoming emotionally invested in the characters' journeys. And I hope that readers will be emotionally invested in Emily, who ultimately is a 12-year-old girl when the book starts. She's at David's mercy. He's 30 years old. She can't possibly be alive to all the manipulation that he practices on her. How can a 12-year-old work out that they're being manipulated by a very clever abuser?
I think one thing the book helps do very well, I think, is it gives accessibility to some very difficult topics. It helps people consider these things and actually not want to talk about them, but helps that dialogue, I think.
Well, I hope what I'm doing is raising awareness of the issues, and certainly when I have a launch, we will be discussing how people who have concerns can access support. I'm very fortunate in that two of my beta readers, an ex-policewoman and a forensic psychologist, are both coming along to take part in the launch event. I do hope that we'll have the opportunity to mention that Claire's Law and Sarah's Law are available for people who have concerns about partners, friends, people who are close to their families, and raise those concerns with the police and discover whether they're justified or not.
Last time we spoke, I think one of the things you mentioned was potential of sort of creating audiobooks or creating audio from the novels. Is that something you've still got lined up? Is that something for this book that might happen? Is that, I guess, that in a lockdown age, that sort of comes part and parcel, I guess, does it, with the book?
It's still something that's lined up. Now, I have to confess, I haven't arranged for audio versions to be made available yet. And I'm very keen to do it with this particular book. I'd quite like to try recording it myself, but maybe you could give me some feedback as to whether you think my voice would suit it or not.
The author is always very authentic, I think. That's what I would say. I was just going to ask as well, Bright Lies comes out at the end of November to tie in with White Ribbon Day. I was just going to ask about the other kind of canon of work that we've spoken about previously and where that sits now. Kind of, what are there other things planned around it? Is it done and dusted? What can you tell us about other things that you might have lined up in the future?
That's a really hard question to answer, James, because I've got no idea what I will be writing in the future. I may continue with psychological thrillers, but equally I might rein back a bit and go back to the rather lighter, frothier style of my earlier books, perhaps do something involving a private detective.
I thought I'd ask anyway. It's always good to see if people, some people have a ready answer and they're planned and they know what they're going to do exactly next. But actually, I think probably it's good to know what you're not going to do, isn't it? I think it's that old adage, maybe.
I'm going to wait for creativity to strike. And usually it does. It may take a while. It may involve some visits to coffee bars. But eventually the ideas come along. And then when they do, you just can't stop them.
So once it's launched, Bright Lies, the new book by A.A. Abbott, will be available on Amazon. If people listening are interested in the other books and the other work that you have been busy with in the last few years, where can they find you online?
I'm very easy to find at aaabbott.co.uk. I'm on Facebook and Twitter as AA Abbott Stories. And of course, if you look for me on Amazon, AA Abbott, I will be there too.
And we should say that's spelt A-B-B-O-T-T. Okay, we should say, just for folks there with their pen and paper, A-B-B-O-T-T-A-A Abbott. So, Helen, it's been great to catch up again, and thanks for coming on. Good luck with Bright Lies, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thanks very much, James. It's been a pleasure.